behind tab three, but I want to highlight for today's discussion the three that are on the table: the groundfish advisors, the groundfish committee's meeting summaries from last week, and there's a copy of Rachel's PowerPoint. Since our last council meeting, the committee has met jointly twice with the Habitat Committee, once on its own concerning Amendment 18. The GAP's met, and the PDT has met at least twice by conference call. Last week, the Groundfish Committee met to review the PDT analysis and recommendations from the GAP. Rachel's got a comprehensive but hopefully a turboed presentation on all the updates, and then Jamie's got a short presentation on a potential framework 51. I've got three motions, and we'll also note that the committee's been made four tasking motions to the PDT. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Rachel.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. I'm going to provide a brief summary of where we're at regarding Amendment 18, and then I'm going to go through these slides pretty quickly, so I may not speak to every bullet point, but you have them there for the details. Okay, so after taking up work on Amendment 18 in earnest this past March, the committee has been considering whether the goals and objectives of this action merit revision. At the request of the committee, the PDT has been busy working on analyses, some of which you just heard, that better characterize trends in fleet diversity and fishery concentration, as well as a preliminary review of the role that permit banks play in fostering fleet diversity. So presentations on this work were made at the AP and committee meetings last week, minus the presentation you just heard. And both of those groups brought forward recommendations for revising the goals and objectives for this action. So I just included here, I won't read it in total, what we have for the existing purpose, need, goals, and objectives for this action over these next four slides. In terms of purpose, the purpose talks about reducing the likelihood of permit holders acquiring and controlling excessive shares and about preventing over-consolidation. This came from the notice of intent for the action. In terms of the need speaks to concerns for the potential for excessive consolidation and lack of diversity in the fishery. And here are the goals as they exist currently. We've gone over these before. The first three speak to this idea of maintaining fleet diversity, and the fourth relates to the idea of preventing excessive shares in the fishery. And here are two existing objectives with specific language about considering an accumulation cap for the fishery. So here are some considerations regarding revisions to amendment goals and objectives in general. Particularly important here is whether a new scoping process would be required and what the details of that, and I think the regional office may have some comments on that for you today. So threw up a very tentative timeline, considering the probable extent of Amendment 18 and the timing of other actions. We're likely looking at implementation at some point in 2015, but this doesn't include any potential new scoping process and how that may move things back. So next I'll run through some recent PDT work in thinking about alternate goals and objectives, the feasibility of different cap options, a preliminary analysis of permit banks, fishery diversity and concentration. So the next two slides are suggestions that have been made by members of the PDT for considering alternate language. for the goals of the action. This language is more concise than the existing goals. And this language is a little bit more verbose, and it speaks, has more specific language about excessive shares, lease market transparency, and entry opportunity. So the initial feedback that we've gotten from General Counsel is that all of the options listed on this slide for the various combinations of what could be capped for this fishery are feasible from a legal standpoint, and that implementing a cap would not on its own trigger turning this program into a limited access privilege program. Regarding the preliminary review of permit banks, the PDT developed a brief and voluntary survey designed to answer the primary question: in the absence of accumulation limits and fleet diversity measures today, how are permit banks helping foster fleet diversity in the fishery? The surveys were sent to 2 public and 8 private permit banks as defined here. Note that we don't have an actual standard definition for a private permit bank. They're commonly understood to be nonprofit organizations that hold permits. So here are all the permit banks that we queried listed here. And we heard back from all but 2 of those, which is a pretty good turnaround given the time frame that we asked these people to fill out these surveys. So here's a table with some survey results. I added a few more details than what was presented last week to the committee. But just note it generally, each permit bank has a unique geographic focus. The next column is the number of permits that are currently held by the permit banks. The number of vessels that have received ACE from these permit banks, the sum total, 189 at the bottom, likely includes several duplicates, so take that with a grain of salt. And if they had a vessel size restriction for who is eligible to receive the quota. So this first bullet actually has a typo. The public permit banks hold less than 1% of the ACE. I've done a back of the envelope for the private permit banks, and they may hold roughly 10 or so percent. I would need to go back and look at that more carefully of the PSC shares. Chad may know better than I, but all of the permit banks distribute ACE at prices below the market at various rates depending on their particular mission. And the permit banks noted that fishermen using this quota, that they can use it as leverage to use either more of their own quota or as capital to then enter the leasing market. So definitely a more thorough review of permit banks may be warranted, but generally the survey responses are showing that collectively the permit banks are fostering fleet diversity due to the diversity of industry segments that they each individually support. And here are some concerns that permit banks wanted to raise to the council's attention. I'm not going to read through them today, but there's a lot more detail in the June 5th PDT memo about this work. So moving on to the other 2 draft reports that have come out of the Social Sciences branch recently regarding fleet diversity and fishery concentration, I want to thank Chad as well as Eric Thunberg for their work in turning around this information for us. So first, the analysis of fleet diversity. This analysis identified, quote, species of fishermen and tracked their existence in the fishery across time from 1994 to 2011. These species were defined by unique combinations of gear type, vessel size, primary landing port county, and whether they fished primarily inshore or offshore. One caveat is that the analysis does not include dependency on groundfish as a species attribute. So, you know, fishermen with 1 pound of landings treated equally as someone who's 100% dependent on groundfish. This could be teased out in future work, however. So they used a range of measures of fleet diversity, of species diversity, that have been used in other kind of ecological diversity studies. I just highlighted one result here, species richness, which is perhaps the most simple to wrap your head around, and that is simply the number of species present in each of these different categories in terms of all active groundfish permits, all active limited access groundfish permits, and those limited access permits with groundfish landings. And you can see that there has been a decline between the beginning and the end of the time series. The bottom row there, those with groundfish landings, the decline is 48% and averaged to about 2.7% per year. So here's a slide with some preliminary conclusions that came out of this work. The kind of the bottom line is that there has been declining diversity as the fleet size has shrunk, but that diversity hasn't really been redistributed to favor a particular niche of the fishery. With two exceptions to note, since 2005 there's been a drop in the proportion of Maine-based species. And in 2009, there was a slight uptick in the proportion of large vessel species. So moving on to the ownership holdings concentration report, fishery concentration was examined by tracking the MRIs at the individual level and at the ownership group level in terms of PSC held, and the ACE held by sectors, so those three different levels. There are three big caveats to this analysis, one which Chad went into a little bit earlier regarding the lack of CPH permits in the data. And there are also fundamental differences in ownership and holdings data pre and post 2010, but they did their best to kind of make a consistent measure across time. And lastly, how ownership is defined may yield very different results. So with those big caveats in mind, here are some of the results that have been observed in the data as a result of this analysis. The data suggests that there was generally increasing concentration in holdings up through 2010, and then there's been kind of a leveling off since that time period. And I just put the results for the top five ownership groups in 2007 had about 8% of course it wasn't PSC at the time, but holdings of, I guess, days at sea. And now they're up around
PSC. Just stick with that, and then they can ask me, and then I'll explain.
All right. Then up around 21% in 2013, whereas the median ownership group has remained level at about 0.5%. Okay, so that's all I'm going to get to there. Details, please refer to Chad. Okay, so after hearing those presentations in much more detail last week, the advisory panel put forward 8 motions, which then the committee 2 days later considered and put forward their own motions, and I've just been asked to briefly run through the advisory panel motions. Terry will pick up the committee motions in his, in your work here as you work through your motions today. But anyway, the advisory panel passed the following motion with a 9-1 vote to revise, the intent was to strike the existing goals and objectives and to replace them with three goals for the amendment, which are on the next slide. But this first slide is additional language that they wanted to insert as kind of a preamble that kind of captures their feeling of the purpose and need for the action, and I'll just read through it quickly. The primary objective of the goals for Amendment 18 is to prioritize and advance industry leadership and participation in achieving federal management goals. Sectors and permit banks are maturing as a valid mechanism to formally interface with industry groups. They are uniquely suited to manage and facilitate the regional application of the necessary and built-in flexibility of national rules and guidance. The goals of Amendment 18 will be best approached from the most local level with council and NOAA oversight. So these are the three goals, and I will read them in detail because the committee then recommended that these come before the council. They are to promote a diverse groundfish fishery, including different gear types, vessel sizes, geographic locations, and levels of participation through sectors and permit banks. Enhance sector management to effectively engage industry to achieve management goals and improve data quality. And three, promote resilience and stability of fishing businesses by encouraging diversification, quota utilization, and capital investment. So you'll note that this language is a little bit more positive. They want to promote versus prohibit, that sort of thing. They want it to be a little bit more broad. This passed with a 9-1 vote. The dissenting view is that there was concern about removing specific language about excessive shares or accumulation caps. And so they also made a couple other motions that are kind of things to that they would like the committee and the council to consider when developing Amendment 18. To conduct an analysis of an ownership cap on multi-species permits. Any ownership cap should not disenfranchise current owners. Two, do not impose restraints on the flow of allocation trades or leases between individuals, sectors, and/or vessel classes. In fisheries with high bycatch of groundfish, including state water fisheries, allocate sub-ACLs of groundfish and establish AMs. Four, allow entire groundfish allocation to be split off from other permits. And five, revise upgrade restrictions to allow permits to be placed on larger, safer platforms to increase level vessel range in response to ACL volatility. motion three and four are similar things that they would like considered. Any analysis and consideration of ownership caps in the multi-species fishery must take into account the full range of potential ACL reductions, current and future. To establish such caps do not prevent businesses from remaining viable. Four, develop mechanisms for flexibility in any cap concepts in order to address unintended obstacles to profitability, survival of fishing businesses that may result from ACL reductions. This is a PDT tasking motion that the committee also recommended to request council staff assess and provide examples of U.S. solutions that provide access to capital for individuals, new entrants, sectors, and community entities. For example, HALBUT New Entrants Finance Program called Community Quota Entities, NIMS Fishery Obligation Fund Financing for Quota. And then the last three motions are issues that the GAP would like addressed concurrent with work on Amendment 18. This first one relates to the Gulf of Maine Georges Bank Haddock spillover issue. The PDT is currently working on a memo, which Dr. Kernan can speak to a little bit later on. The next relates to the Eastern U.S. Canada area reporting, which I believe is a topic for tomorrow morning. And the last one relates to addressing discard rate calculations. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you for that. excuse me. My intention is we're coming up on break time, but I wanted to ask Gene if he had any comments on the question of having to go back out for scoping if, in fact, the goals were changed.
The region has looked at that and can answer.
Sue, thank you.
We did talk at the region. We're not clear what's going to come out of the council. We don't believe so, but we'd like to look at it a little bit more. If we did, you know, it would be a notice of intent for another 30 days of comment, but it wouldn't hold up the process. And we don't believe that you would need any public hearings because it's not significantly different from the original goals and objectives.
Tom Neese.
Not to question you, Sue, but I'm looking at the second goal and objective that's listed, and it concerns me a little bit because it seems so vague. To enhance sector management to effectively engage sectors. That seems to be inviting suggestions across a possible broad range of sector management issues that could significantly change the scope of the amendment. I mean, have you guys thought about that particular objective there?
That actually was the one that we had some questions about, but weren't entirely clear what it meant and why we wanted a little more time to think about it.
Okay. I think what we will, my intention would be to let's take a 10-minute break. We'll come back at 10:05. We'll get Jamie's presentation. We can answer some questions then and move into the actual motions.